This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Six major Wisconsin healthcare systems announced earlier this month that they were partnering to create a new statewide network. The hope is to improve healthcare and create a collaboration model for other hospitals. One of the partners is Gunderson Health System in La Crosse. Here today to talk more about the partnership are Jerry Arndt, he's the Senior Vice President with Gunderson Health System, and Mark Platt, Senior Vice President Business Services with Gunderson Health System. So, Jerry, I'm wondering if you can just first explain what exactly sparked the creation of this new statewide partnership.
Well, these are six very strong systems that independently have done very well in quality and cost metrics.
I'm wondering if maybe we should actually start out by listing them off.
Okay. The participants are Aurora, University of Wisconsin, Theta, Bellin, and Aspirus. Aurora is located over in the southeastern part of the state, Theta in Appleton, Bellin in Green Bay, Aspirus in Wausau, and of course we're here in La Crosse and around the area.
So you all decided to come together and create this partnership.
Yes, and I think our primary motivation were to find ways to improve quality of healthcare and reduce cost of healthcare. We're all working on those things independently, but we felt like as a partnership, that we could do that faster than any of us could do it independently and probably share some infrastructure as well.
And Mark, do you want to add on to that?
Yeah, I think, again, as Jerry said, we need to get to where we're all heading faster. Every system who's involved in this partnership has high quality, is committed to greater efficiency, and is getting there on its own, but we can do that better together. At the same time, the values of these systems are very much centered on what's right for the patient and the communities they serve. And that's one of the reasons this is going to work, is because we have similar values and vision for where we need to go and who we're working for.
So up until this point, as you mentioned, Jerry, you know, each of these hospital systems has been operating independently. And is that generally how healthcare systems have been working, either regionally or within the U.S.?
The independence, as we put this partnership together, there's a couple things that we need to mention. There's absolutely no merger that has taken place as a part of this partnership. The balance sheets are still completely separate. The governance is completely separate. The partnership really comes in the form of sharing best practices and leveraging what we can do as independent organizations that just communicate more effectively with each other and share information, share best practices.
So that communication was lacking up until this point. I mean, I'm sure that
this
systems communicate.
This formalizes it.
Yeah, there's been ways that we've collaborated together as systems across the state of Wisconsin, especially pretty unique part of the country for healthcare in the way we've collaborated and the high quality we have in the Midwest here. The Wisconsin Collaborative is an example of that, where we have gotten together and shared some best practices. But I think this puts more glue around that and motivates us towards a common goal in a way that this loose affiliation and the loose partnership, looser with the consortium, the Wisconsin Collaborative, was able to do.
And I wonder, with sometimes, you know, obviously we have a unique situation in La Crosse with Gunderson Health System and also Mayo Clinic Health System, and we hear a bit of collaboration between the two hospitals quite often.
Yes.
In different projects, but they're not a part of this statewide partnership, at least at this point in time.
That's correct.
So does this partnership yet have a name?
We do not have a formal name.
Okay.
It's a strategic partnership of six systems that are going to maintain their names, right? So our names, our brands, and our markets are what it's important to us, and that's where we're at today.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, we're talking about a new statewide partnership made up of six healthcare providers, including Gunderson Health System in La Crosse. My guests are Mark Platt, Senior Vice President, Business Services with Gunderson Health System, and Jerry Arndt. He's the Senior Vice President with Gunderson Health System. So let's sort of break down these different goals within this partnership. Jerry, you talked about how one goal is to improve healthcare quality throughout the different healthcare providers. Can you expand on that a little more?
Yeah, actually, I think there's – let me start by kind of framing it up as sort of three legs of what we're trying to do here. One of them is clinical integration. Another is business collaboration. And a third is insurance contracting. All three of those are important goals. In the area of clinical integration, obviously there are differences in the way care is delivered. Some are better than others. There's evidence-based successes that can be shared across six organizations that give us all the opportunity to learn from each other. So clinical integration is where it all starts as it relates to quality improvement. Sharing data, understanding best practices, and learning from each other is what that's all about.
So what's something that Gunderson could share with Aurora or Bellin?
Well, I think one of the things that we're well known for is our breast care. We're nationally recognized for our quality of breast care. We're known for research in breast care. We can bring that to the table. Another is our Respecting Choices program, end-of-life care. That is something that we're nationally known for, and we can bring those kinds of things to the table. And the other five partners all have similar things that they can bring to the table, and we don't all have to reinvent the wheel.
Sure.
Right, so imagine if you have all six systems all bringing the best of what they've done, all nationally recognized, to individual roundtables where providers from every organization are around the table, learning from each other, getting better, at a speed of which would not be possible on our own. And that's from a clinical quality standpoint, not only clinical quality, but the efficiency at which we do it, because cost matters as we go forward in healthcare as well. We can get to a place that none of us could get to as fast as we will together.
So is there information that Gunderson is looking forward to, I wouldn't say improving upon, but, you know, if we say with Aurora in the Milwaukee area, what can they bring to Gunderson or any of the other providers?
You know, I don't know that from our standpoint we've specifically identified those things as we're early in this partnership to decide which partners are bringing which best practices. But again, I think we've all got them. Jerry, I don't know if you've got anything to add to that.
No, I would agree. And I think what we've formed a clinical integration committee. And one of the things that we have on that committee is physician representation from all six organizations. We have quality professionals from all six organizations. And what they'll bring is they'll bring the data, and it'll become clear where there is opportunities, who's got stuff that the others could benefit from, and what best practices turn out to be.
Yeah, and you said it well. I think it's going to be driven by the data of each system as we get together, and we can share that data openly and be able to look at who's doing the best in certain areas and who can help each other.
So does it almost translate, let's say there is a doctor who treats women who have been diagnosed with breast cancer. Mm-hmm. Would that doctor or his or her staff then maybe just educate other doctors at these different hospitals? Are there conferences that are created, or is that this all still in the works, how exactly this plays out?
Well, certainly there will be a lot of direct communication from the providers that are specialized in a particular area. They'll talk to each other. And from time to time, there may actually be some care that's physically moved from one location to the other if there's a particular specialty that one organization has that none of the others do. It's all about getting the patients the best care that they can get.
And, Mark, let's talk about the business aspect of all of this. One of the things that was mentioned was how this could affect costs and whatnot. And maybe those are two different parts, mm-hmm. but can you kind of break down about how this changes the business aspect of...
Well, yeah, there are a number of things that scale matters in when it comes to the way you execute the business side of your system. And so just something like the way we purchase all the millions and millions of dollars of supplies that we all use in this system. So I think that if you have a certain scale, you can do a better job more efficiently purchasing the things you need to run your business. So group purchasing on that. And at the same time, we're all on a common medical record, Epic.
Based in Madison.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is one of those areas where we've got some collaboration we can do on the IT side, how we manage our data, how we look at our data, how we use our data to improve care and maximize our benefit to our communities. And I think we can do those things together with the scale we have now in a way that's more efficient, that lowers the cost of care, and increases the quality at the same time. Pretty good combo.
Are there other ways besides sharing costs, you know, maybe ordering syringes in massive bulk, that this could potentially save costs in the long run?
Yeah, I think sharing infrastructure is one of the big ones. An example, one of the partners in this group was in the early stages of looking at building a backup data center, all the hardware that goes along with the information technology side of the business. Data centers are expensive. With this partnership in place, I'm sure they're going to take a second look at, gee, we've got five partners that have data centers too, and could some of our redundancy and backup and support infrastructure be located in one of our partners' places rather than us investing on our own in that kind of a thing? So that's a good example, I think.
Are there any added costs within this partnership?
Well, I think that right now that there's really no individual system overhead that's being added. There is some centralized functions that are being created that are pretty minor and pretty small, a couple employees that help manage this partnership. But that to that extent, that's about it right now.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Today, we're talking about a new statewide partnership made up of six healthcare providers, including Gunderson Health System in La Crosse. My guests are Mark Platt. He's Senior Vice President, Business Services with Gunderson Health System. And Jerry Arndt. He's the Senior Vice President with Gunderson Health System. Jerry, you said sort of one of the third aspects of this partnership is dealing with the insurance issue. How does this work out when it comes to insurance plans for patients?
Well, basically what we've agreed to do is be a network, basically a group of providers that provides a network for insurance companies to contract with. And in the insurance vernacular, the term narrow network is often used. That means the patients that are covered under a certain insurance product basically get their care from one of us as part of the group of six providers that make up this network.
So if there is an individual living in La Crosse, could they potentially purchase UW Health insurance based out of Madison now with this new partnership, whereas maybe before they would have to choose between Gunderson or Mayo or some of the other federally?
Well, currently the product that's available on the market today that accesses this narrow network is Anthem's Blue Priority. So there's a product that's been created that's out there now that includes all of us in a narrow network. Covers 90% of the population of the state of Wisconsin with no clinical service gap. So it's a pretty compelling, high-quality, very competitive product that Anthem is the first in the market with. There will probably be others.
And how does this work out with the new healthcare law then, too? Or does it? Or what are
you can access this on the exchange.
Okay, yeah. Sure.
Right.
And then as far as, I guess that kind of plays into the fact that patients can potentially use the different networks too. How will that work under these insurance plans or, you know, even if someone just had Gunderson Health System insurance?
So what will be different for someone today if they had the narrow network plan versus the Gunderson plan?
Sure.
Their network just got maybe a little different, a little bigger, maybe more narrow in certain markets as well.
So if someone does have Gunderson Health Insurance and maybe they find themselves, they get sick while they're in Appleton or they have an accident in Appleton, does this new partnership make a difference for the care that they could potentially receive at ThetaCare in Appleton?
Under the Gunderson Health Plan, per se, we have, for emergency services or critical services, we have a way of providing care wherever you are in the United States, and it wouldn't even have to be within the group of six providers. So for emergency care, they could get it. Beyond that, the Gunderson Health Plan is still – it's a great product. Basically, what this – new product will give a few more people that didn't have access to our organization through that Gunderson Health Plan an opportunity to get their care from Gunderson or from any of those other five providers.
And are there other things that current patients will notice once this partnership does really start rolling along? Are there short-term differences? Are there major long-term differences that patients will notice?
I think initially there's really no change. It's not a merger. There's no name change. There's no governance change. We're still the same system we were before the partnership happened, and we will be going into the partnership and into the future. I think what the patients should notice going forward as we continue to execute on our vision and what we created this network to create or the partnership to accomplish is higher quality and lower cost within the system over time that you'll see happen quicker than it would have without this partnership. So I think that's more of a longer-term goal. But not multiple years. I think even in the next 12 months, you'll see some of that.
Do you see that a partnership like this could bring in potentially more patients? I know you said, Jerry, that with the new, at least insurance plan, it could bring more people in.
Yes. I think this is another insurance vehicle for people to access care, affordable care at Gunderson. And I believe it'll be incremental. It'll be additive to what we have now.
Obviously, Gunderson is a major employer in the area, too. How will the different employees that work in the hospitals, whether they're working in IT, whether it's a doctor or a nurse, will they really notice many changes because of this new partnership?
Again, the changes to the actual way we do our business every day, I don't think will be visible to most people within the organization. If they're on one of these clinical roundtables where we're working together with these systems to improve the quality and efficiency of our care, they'll certainly see some differences. So we've got leaders involved in that already. And I think that going forward, as the volumes increase, they may see something change with that as more people can access our system. But really, Gunderson's going to remain very similar to what it is today for all of our employees.
And I think it just basically enhances the external communication, formalizes the external communication that we've got with those other five provider groups. And that has been going on for some time. It's just more formalized, I think more structured, and probably a little more disciplined in terms of moving things along. We're going to have goals as a group that we're going to measure, and we're competitive enough that we're going to hit them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good point. We're going to be in competition now with our partners to see who can get better faster, and I think that'll drive change as well as anything else.
Well, it is interesting because, you know, how often you hear that communication is key and really just, you know, advancing the greater good and whatnot, and how it is something that is so simple at its core, and yet now here you are formalizing this communication among the different hospitals. And it will be interesting to see how, over time, the difference that formalized communication does make.
Yeah, and as we're in a network together, the motivation to actually have that communication, because our success will be linked in some tangible way to the success of our other partners.
And our performance will be very transparent. I mean, we'll all be able to see how well each other is doing. And obviously, that's a form of motivation. To be best.
Sure. Are you optimistic that each of the organizations will be able to work well together? Because these are, you know, major institutions that have many different minds and goals and ideas.
One of the things I think that we did when we put the group together is we really looked for like-mindedness between the organizations. We looked at values that were very similar. We looked at quality data. We looked at cost data. We said, you know, what we need are organizations that can do what you're asking, can work together because there's enough alignment.
Yeah, Mark? And again, as we've been in the room with these other systems, their senior executives and their CEOs, one of the things that we've done has been, you know, you go into those things a little tentative about where it goes. Are we really going to be aligned in our values and our mission and our vision? Because in a partnership, those are the things that really matter that many people overlook. If you're just looking to build scale and size and you mash things together, some people overlook how important culture is. And so as we've been in those rooms and seeing that the values that we have for our community and our patients have been really the core of what these other systems are looking to do, is to improve faster the things they do well already and fill in the gaps maybe where they need help so that they can be better for their community and their patients. That's been the whole discussion to this point. So it's been very encouraging. We're very excited about the potential we have to take an industry that needs to move towards its goal faster. And we think we've got a formula here that's going to make a huge difference in Wisconsin and the Midwest and maybe a model for future collaborations.
And let's talk about that a little more. Are you all open to having other healthcare providers, systems join this partnership?
I believe that what we'll be looking for is organizations that can fit well within what we put together. We wouldn't want to dilute the quality. We won't want to dilute the cost performance of the organization by just adding partners.
Sure.
But I think the notion of expanding, that's certainly on the horizon.
Yeah, again, our goal is to get better faster and more efficiently. And if there's partners out there that can help us achieve that goal, that's what we're looking for, each of us. So as a partnership, we want other partners that can help us get there if they're out there. So we're open.
And what are some of those goals that you have in common with the different organizations, these goals that if other healthcare systems were to join, what sort of qualities would you want them to have in becoming a partner?
Well, a lot of the quality metrics are well defined. I mean, we've got the Wisconsin Collaborative for Healthcare Quality, and they've for years have been developing the appropriate measures where you can compare organizations one to the other. So, I mean, some of those metrics that have been well established over time will be used by this group as well, and it'll give us an opportunity to transparently share between us whether or not who's at the top of the list, who's got room for improvement, and how to achieve it.
Yeah, so we want partners that will be additive to the overall partnership's quality metrics and its efficiency metrics. So as we look at other potential partners, hopefully they would have the same quality and efficiency that we have already as a group, because that's one of the things that sets us apart.
Could it potentially expand outside of Wisconsin? Because obviously Gunderson's yes. care is not confined to the borders of
the state. We have
expanded state,
outside
right?
of Wisconsin, it turns out, right? So yeah. we're in Minnesota and Iowa and Aurora. UW
probably
is in Illinois.
Illinois yeah.
We're in Michigan as a partnership. So we're already expanded outside of the state, and we mm-hmm. are open. No one has said that this is a Wisconsin club and there's no other entries from outside the state.
And Marina, a term that I'd just like to introduce to you mm-hmm. is system of systems.
Yes.
That's a term that we've used to describe what we've created here. So in organizations that try to bring a complete merger together, where you've got to combine the governance and the financial statements and all that stuff get together, administratively, those things are often very, very difficult to accomplish, and they wind up distracting from the main event of improving quality and reducing cost. In this case, we've got the best of both worlds. We won't be distracted by all those merger complications, and we can do the things that really are the most important things to do, and that's improve quality and reduce cost quicker.
Does this lay the groundwork for a merger decades down the line, potentially?
Well, I'm not going to predict decades down the line, but at this point, as Jerry just said, the system of systems concept, which our boss, our mm-hmm. CEO, Jeff Thompson, Dr. Thompson's been talking about for quite some time, is the best system we believe we could create to get us where we want to go in the acceleration of our quality and our efficiency metrics. And so if there were another model, I would like to think we're open to it, because it's not about the structure. It's about what we're trying to accomplish, what our mission and our vision and our values are leading us to. And so this is the best system, the best way to do that we know today.
Right. Well said.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Today, we're talking about a new statewide partnership made up of six healthcare providers, including Gunderson Health System in La Crosse. My guests are Jerry Art, he's the Senior Vice President with Gunderson Health System, and Mark Platt is Senior Vice President Business Services with Gunderson Health System. Mark, you had mentioned that this could potentially serve as a model for potentially other healthcare systems throughout the country. Is this partnership, is this new? Do we see this elsewhere in the country? Or, as you said, is this maybe something others could look towards?
I think you've probably seen other things that have kind of touched on what we're trying to do, where you've created partnerships that weren't full mergers. But I think the number of systems, the scale, and the quality metrics, and even how close we are to being on par in size in many cases is different. And so it is unique. It's certainly unique in Wisconsin. And we do believe that this is the right way to get to where we need as an industry in healthcare. And so I would hope if we're getting this thing right, other people are going to watch and say, that's the way you do it. And that's how we'll know we hit it out of the park. That's our goal.
So if others do look towards this model eventually, how could it change healthcare within our country?
Well, I think 18.2% GDP might be too much for healthcare. And so, again, we would love to see healthcare get to a higher quality, a more efficient level. And I think we can achieve both of those. I think we can get more efficient, lower healthcare costs without sacrificing quality. And that's the reason we're doing this, because we believe that's what our communities need from us.
And with this partnership not including Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse, will there be much of a difference between Gunderson and Mayo that didn't currently exist now that if Mayo's not in this partnership at all?
I don't think it'll be that noticeable. And I think it's important to note that we collaborate in many, many ways at the local level right now with our friends from Mayo.
Jerry Arndt is a Senior Vice President with Gunderson Health System, and Mark Platt is Senior Vice President of Business Services with Gunderson Health System. Today, we talked about a new statewide partnership made up of 6 healthcare providers, including Gunderson Health System in La Crosse. You're listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. Coming up next, we'll talk about help that's available for small communities in southwestern Wisconsin to deal with the invasive emerald ash borer. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has other archives of recent editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make a suggestion for a future show, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows and photos, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. The emerald ash borer is an invasive insect found in ash trees in almost half of Wisconsin, including the entire southwestern part of the state. The invasion is expected to decimate the ash tree population. Some communities have taken proactive steps to treat or even cut down certain ash trees. But many smaller communities do not have the resources to deal with this issue alone. The Southwest Badger Resource Conservation and Development Council is helping to fill that void by partnering with communities to inventory public ash tree populations and advise them on how to deal with the emerald ash borer. Based in Platteville, the group is a community development organization that works in 9 southwest Wisconsin counties. Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis talked about the program and the problem with Southwest Badger forester Patrick Dayton and John Houth, who's the director of public works in the city of Lancaster. Patrick Dayton talks about the history of the emerald ash borer.
The emerald ash borer was first found in the country in the Detroit area around 2002. We expect that it was there for possibly 10 years or more, but the bug is hard to detect. And since it was the first introduction into the country, the entomologists, the foresters in this country weren't ready to diagnose it. So when they did find it, they realized it was going to be quite a problem, and they took different steps to try to stop it in the Detroit area in Michigan, and then we readjusted our attempts to do that as we found it in more places in the country. In the state of Wisconsin, it was first found in the Newburgh, Milwaukee area, 2008-2009, and it was found in western Wisconsin in the Victory, DeSoto area, in Crawford and Vernon counties in 2009. And so we have seen that the area of the emerald ash borer has been expanding quite rapidly, and our approaches to deal with it have been adjusted also.
How so?
How so? When we first started, we wondered if we could not create like a firewall where we would stop it. We would remove all the ash trees around the Detroit area and try to eliminate it. But this bug, like I said, is hard to detect, and it moves quite quickly, mostly through human movement. And so we realized that was not going to be the case. So we have still continued to try to slow the spread of the bug, and we try to educate people as the severity of the effects. But right now we do not have any good answers to stopping it.
It seems like every month or two we're hearing about the emerald ash borer being found somewhere in this part of the country. What is the current situation in southwestern Wisconsin, southeast Minnesota, and really in the country at large?
It was just found in 3 new counties in southwest Wisconsin, which led to the quarantine of pretty much all of southwest Wisconsin, because we feel like the movement of firewood and the bug will be pretty pervasive. The reason why you keep hearing about it is because resource professionals want to let people know that this is a very serious situation. Oftentimes in the news, you're going to hear about problems that do exist. And so sometimes the severity will be caught in the mix. But emerald ash borer kills pretty much all ash, Native American ash trees. And there are a lot of ash trees in cities and in the forests of southwest Wisconsin. So probably the reason why people keep hearing about it is because we want to make sure that people take it serious.
John, could you talk a little bit about what the city of Lancaster is dealing with?
The timing was basically perfect with Patrick contacting us months ago about doing a survey of our ash trees and getting a plan together. And then recently, Grant County was quarantined with the discovery of emerald ash borer, which really made this an important project. My predecessor had started a survey of ash trees 2 or 3 years ago, and I really hadn't even given it much of a thought. Was taking over some new job duties, and we're a town of under 4,000 people, so we just don't have the staff to commit a lot of time to this. So with Patrick and Southwest Badger coming in to help us, this is really going to give us something we can start planning and deciding how we're going to handle this.
The emerald ash borer is in Lancaster.
It wasn't discovered in Lancaster. Patrick can correct me if I'm wrong, but it was discovered near Cassville, I believe, which is 19 or 20 miles to the west of us.
We have not seen it in Lancaster, but the fact that it's been found so close, like I said, it can take up to 3 to 5 years for trees to start dying from the emerald ash borer. Its girdling effect when it cuts off the nutrient and water flow to the tree. And so it can be in a city undetected for 2 to 3 years before it becomes a problem. So no, it has not been found in Lancaster, but all the ash trees are now put on notice.
What is the approach you take in that situation?
The basis of the project, which was funded by the Wisconsin DNR Forestry Division, a grant from the DNR, is to find the 50 best and the 50 worst ash trees in a city. Now, in doing so, what we have to do for a city or village is find all the ash trees that they own. So that's the first probably benefit that they get. And then the second is when we start evaluating trees to find the best and the worst, the 50 worst ash trees should be removed right away or as soon as possible. And the reason why we'd want to do that instead of just removing all the ash trees in one street, these 50 worst ash trees, they're probably the ones that should be removed whether the emerald ash borer is there or not. They're just not very healthy trees. So those are kind of the low-hanging fruit. The 50 best ash trees would be the ones that possibly, if a city or village were willing to, they would treat it with a chemical and protect those. If they're not willing to invest that money, then those would be the 50 trees that were left to the end. And all, like I said, all the ash trees will be found and evaluated. So basically what we're doing is setting up a planned workload for cities and villages, because if we didn't do anything and then the bug were to start killing trees, there would be a huge glut of a workload for 1 year that could really bust city budgets and make a lot of people upset.
John, from the state of Lancaster's perspective, have you done the inventory yet, or do you have any idea how many ash trees you have?
Patrick spent 2 or 3 days down here doing a survey, and I don't know what he's come up with so far since he's been doing a survey, but...
So far, John, I would say that we've spent 2 days down there, probably another 2 days to come, and about 60 or 70 ash trees that we have found, so I'm guessing... the workload for Lancaster will be in the 150 to 200 ash trees that they own. Now, that does not include the ash trees that are on private property.
Right. And that might not also include all of a comprehensive total of our golf course and some of our parkland, too. We have some pretty good-sized parkland that the city owns, too, and that's not going to be absolutely everything, but the majority of the right-of-way along the streets is what we're looking at right now.
So John is most certainly correct. And to that point, another hopefully benefit of this project will, as we're doing the inventory for the city and we're getting more people to notice this, we're hoping more of the residents and these other property owners in Lancaster that John mentioned will take notice and then start asking questions and start saying, how are we going to plan the workload and what we need to get done.
One thing I've learned from him is we went down about a two-block stretch the other day and quite a few ash trees on it. We also noticed some other trees that are probably in worse shape, even if they're not ash trees, and that's going to help us plan. That it's going to be a shock if we took all the trees down on that street, but there's some that we're going to maybe do some picking and choosing and planning ahead how to get trees replaced. So it's not such an open space And that's a big benefit we're going to gain out of this, too, is a little bit of management.
That block of trees that John mentioned, I remember that, and it's a really good highlight of what the project is supposed to accomplish, that if we took all the ash trees off that block, we'd be leaving some very low-quality trees of other species. And so instead of just going through that block and taking all the ash, we're going to maybe take one or two of the worst ash, and then John and his crew can maybe look at some of these other worst trees, non-ash trees that maybe need to be removed, and we would be keeping, we'd actually be keeping a couple ash trees around for a little while until they can have a plan of what they're going to do with that block as far as replanting.
John, do you do a lot of it in-house, or is it something you have to contract for?
We do both. Our public works crew has had training on how to properly trim and prune trees, and we have a bucket truck where we can do a certain amount of work ourselves, and that's one thing that Patrick's helping us with, and with myself and some of our staff that will go with him. We can kind of they kind of know about how big a tree we can handle ourselves, and if there's hazards around it, our crews are able to handle it. Otherwise, it'll be contracted, and we have local contractors that we normally work with for bigger trees. So, that's going to be one of the things we have to decide. Is it going to be better for us to do some of these ourselves or contract the work out? But it'll be quite an expense in the future.
How serious is the need for small communities like the city of Lancaster to have a resource like this to deal with the emerald ash borer?
It was very beneficial for us for this opportunity, from the match that we're going to put into it from our own resources and what we're getting back from Southwest Badger. Otherwise, I think a lot of communities just wouldn't even be able to deal with it, or you're going to deal with something else first. You're going to deal with other priorities first, but this really helped us get going on it and start getting a plan together. But for communities to come up with the funding on their own, something else is probably going to have to be put aside to deal with this. Something else is going to have to give.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio La Crosse. I'm John Davis. We're talking about the spread of the emerald ash borer in this part of the state, what it's doing to ash trees, and the help that's now available to communities in the southwestern region of Wisconsin. Our guests are Southwest Badger Resource Conservation and Development Council Forester Patrick Dayton and John Howth. He's Director of Public Works for the City of Lancaster. How does the funding piece of this work, Patrick?
We applied for a grant from the Wisconsin DNR Forestry Division to partner with these local communities. And then what the Wisconsin DNR asked us to do is find a one-to-one match for that work. And so what we're asking communities to do, instead of providing financial match, is we want their time. We want their effort to match ours. And so, as John mentioned, when I'm out doing the inventory, he came out with me one day. We're going to have another one of his street employees come out with me one day. And then as they do the removal, or they plant some new trees, that can be counted as that one-to-one match. And oftentimes government funders or other grant funders love to see that. They love to see that their investment is actually being doubled or tripled. And that's kind of the point of the project, too, is not for me to come and solve the problems for the city of Lancaster or any other community. So when I leave, they will have me as a resource, and the Wisconsin DNR and the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection and others as resources, but they are more capable of answering questions and dealing with urban forestry problems.
Every year we budget so much for tree removal and tree planting, and this year we had a windstorm come through at the end of June that took down a lot of trees and damaged a lot of trees. So that's an extra expense, that you're obviously not planning on, but we have to deal with. We had to deal with the cleanup, and now we've lost some trees, and we're seeing more damage that's becoming more evident as time goes by, that more trees may have to come down, and that just puts more of a bind on a community when you also have to deal with something like the emerald ash borer too.
I think John just nailed it, is that cities and villages have to react to problems as they present themselves, and that does stress budgets. this emerald ash borer is going to be a significant problem, but it's something that we can start planning the work for. So that's what the whole point of the project is to help cities and communities say, we don't need any more severe problems that we have to react to. This is a problem that's going to be severe that we need to get started on right now.
How much resources are going towards the city of Lancaster, for example?
I would say that I've spent 4 days there, and I probably am budgeting another 2 or 3 days. And so it's actually it's significant, but not as much as you would think because we are getting to it early. Now, the city of Lancaster, they're a great bunch of people to work with. So they are starting to invest some time and effort into their urban forest also. So, but if they can make that part of their workload instead of reacting to this, you know, huge, severe problem, then it's more manageable.
After this inventorying is done, obviously there's going to be some real expense. Does Southwest Badger, are you still involved in that, or is that the city of Lancaster's issue to deal with then?
Another emphasis of this project is the state of Wisconsin and the federal government are not coming to save. They're not going to finance the removal cost of this big problem. And so Southwest Badger RC&D will stay involved. And actually, John and I were just, as we were evaluating some trees, I realized that there's going to be more assistance I can provide Lancaster as far as planning their workload. As far as paying for trees to be removed or removing trees ourselves, that's going to be up to the village or the city to do.
And John, is that the costly part?
When we get the trees identified, we're also going to have to look at that time, then we're going to have to look at just the normal trees that we would be taking down in a year's time anyway. And, you know, we're just going to have to try to budget for that, get rid of the, like Patrick said, if we pick the 50 worst ash trees, and then also we're going to have to get a little better handle on just the normal trees that have to be taken down in a year's time. We're just going to have to lump that into one process and, you know, get the hazards, no matter what kind of tree they are. We're going to have to allow for that every year now, maybe more so than in the past. And you know, once we get this identified and, you know, basically we're going to have to get a count on them and say we can do this many a year and we can afford to do this much a year, and also the replanting. So it's going to take some time yet. We're just going to, and it's budget time right now for all municipalities. So the timing's pretty good. By the end of the year, we can get some kind of an idea. But I, you know, to put a dollar figure on it now is too soon.
What's been so nice about working with John and the city of Lancaster is I can see that they value their urban forestry, their trees in their city. There are great values of having trees in the city, stormwater runoff, heat abatement, oxygen production, and just property value increases. But there are also costs of having trees in the city and liabilities. And the city of Lancaster seems like they're well on their way of finding the balance of having this community discussion of, you know, we do want trees, so how can we best manage them?
So there are dozens of Lancasters in the 9 counties that you deal with. Are you going to be able to help them all with this, or is it a first-come, first-served basis?
It is a first-come, first-served basis. These grant-funded projects, they only last so long.
How big is the DNR grant again?
The grant is for $25,000, and like I said,
which is not a lot. Or is it?
It's generous. I'm very grateful for it, but like you just mentioned, there are a lot of communities that would love for us to come. So far, I have not been overwhelmed. We have 4 or 5 communities that are in line right now. If that were to double, that's at a point where I would say I don't think we're going to be able to get to all of them.
Are you providing advice to communities about what they do to replace these trees as well? And what is the best advice for that?
There's a couple of good pieces of advice is to have a diverse group of trees. Try to use native species as much as possible. But the Wisconsin DNR has a good list of trees that will survive in cities, because cities, the urban landscape is tough on trees. Between soil compaction and air quality and kids pulling off bark, it's hard in a city for a tree to survive. And so we can't plant all of the native species that we have out in the forest in our cities. So there are certain species that do better than others. So being smart about, in that regard is good. But other than that, a diverse urban forest with as many native species as possible is a good advice.
John, if you start working on a plan to replace lost ash trees?
Not yet, we haven't. This is kind of the start for that. I think what we're going to look at is, with our normal tree replacement, is getting some more varieties. That I think that's going to be important than what, more important than what we've been doing. It's been typically the maples and crabapple type trees, things that can grow on the boulevard is typically what we've been staying with. But I think we're going to be looking at some other varieties, and we'll just incorporate that in to what's going to fit best in the area that we have. When we take an ash tree out, what's going to fit best back in this area if we can put something back in there, or if it should even go back in that same area?
The city of Lancaster isn't alone in that fact that they planted 2 to 3, 4 to 5 species. A lot of urban foresters or communities have been criticized for that. The reason why, a main reason why they did that was because they found a few trees that really work well in the city setting. So now we are just trying to work as resource professionals to provide a diverse, more diverse offering of those trees that can survive in the city.
A lot of urban places have a diverse population of, you know, maples, or and something could hit the maples in 20 years. And
well, maple is actually probably more prevalent in cities than ash trees
right.
are. And so right now, Wisconsin DNR and a lot of arborists are kind of trying to tell cities that don't replace the ash trees with maples. This emerald ash borer is in a different category. It would be in that Dutch elm disease category of like killing all trees, even healthy trees. And so oftentimes we'll see other urban trees suffer from problems, multiple problems. If there's street salt issues, or if there's the roots have been mowed, or somehow someone hit it with a car or with a bike, they'll have previous problems that then allow in other problems to come and kill it. This emerald ash borer, similar to the Dutch elm disease, it's killing healthy trees, trees that are perfectly fine.
Do you have advice for people who have an ash tree on their private property?
You can call a certified arborist. You can call your local county extension agent and get some advice. There's a good website put on by DATCAP, Department of Agricultural, Trade, and Consumer Protection, that will offer you some good advice. Chemically treating, injecting a proper insecticide into your tree is an option. If you have that just perfect tree in your front yard or one that you just really care about, there are treatments that you can do to that tree to save it. And the treatment I'm thinking of lasts every 2 years, and you can continue to do that treatment until you come to a point where you've planted a new tree that has grown to take its place, or until a point where that tree has now become damaged and it should be removed. But you can treat specific trees to save them, to help fight the emerald ash borer. That being said, if you have a collection of ash trees on your property, or if the ash tree on your in front of your home is not in very good shape, you do want to start considering replacing it by removing it and planting another tree.
John, is the city of Lancaster working with private landowners at all? Or if you're taking questions from private landowners, what they should do with their ash trees?
We have not yet. We've just done some news releases that this survey was starting, and Patrick can correct me if I'm wrong, but we will probably have a public forum type thing or an informational thing once we complete our survey, just to let the public know what we have found just with city-owned trees, and then do some outreach to the homeowners here in the city to let them know what they should probably do.
So as part of this grant project, yes, we are going to have community workshops and community meetings. There's already one planned for Viroqua in September. We are going to probably have one in Lancaster. It has not been scheduled yet. And then in other counties in southwest Wisconsin. And the point of that is to address, answer questions more than anything from the homeowners.
So there is some grant money left.
Yes.
And communities that may be interested, What do you want them to do? Do they have to get a hold of you to get some help?
The way the process works is, yes, they contact me, and we set up a meeting, and then I go to the community and tell them, describe the project in more detail than we did right here, and really get an idea of what we can accomplish, and then, yeah, we just start the work.
Patrick Dayton is a forester with Southwest Badger Resource Conservation and Development Council. John Houth is Director of Public Works for the City of Lancaster. They spoke with Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis about a Southwest Badger program to help smaller communities in Southwest Wisconsin deal with the emerald ash borer. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find a link to the Southwest Badger program. Our site also has other archives of other recent editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to make a suggestion for a future show, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers.